And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show. It's just turned 5 minutes past nine on this Wednesday. It is the 15th of May. How are you all keeping out there? I hope you're very well indeed. And stay on board for the next 3 hours. We have a very interesting and varied show, as always. Coming up very shortly, do you remember I flagged earlier in the week and we had a bit of interest in it and I wanted to follow through on it? There is a scheme out there at the moment for grants for the refurbishment of derelict properties. And we're going to be doing a bit of a Q&A on that shortly. So if you have any questions in relation to that, how the scheme works, what's in, what's out, the totals available, you know, if you have to bridge in advance, how you draw it down, all of that type of stuff. Maybe you've had an interest in it, or maybe you've thinking of applying for it and you want to know what's going on. Well, get your questions into us now. This is as it relates to the derelict property grant. It might be called something else, but you know what I mean. I think we know what we're talking about here. 086 60 25,000, WhatsApps and texts on that issue or anything else you want to talk about. If you want to play a birthday request, anniversary, wedding, anything as well, more than happy to receive those. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25,000, and maybe it suits you to email comments at highlandradio.com. And I will just remind you, because we have close on now 2 million live minutes viewed every single month, nearly 2 million live minutes viewed every single month of the 9 till noon show across our social medias, which is a remarkable a figure when you think about it, what we're doing here. But how do you do it? YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. That means you can watch on your smart TV or your Fire Stick if you're at home, or you can cast it to your Chromecast, you know, yourself, if that suits you. And I don't know so many of you do as well. So good morning. It's lovely to have you on board choosing us instead of this morning or some other nonsense. We're also on Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sport, and on the X platform, the audience growing there every day as well. Right, okay. Let's start with a look at the newspapers and the Irish Times. Only 61 homes with defective blocks have been fully remediated under a government grant scheme which was first opened nearly 4 years ago. We do sometimes forget the 90-10 predates this enhanced scheme. 61 homes fully remediated. That's all in 4 years. The Oireachtas Committee on Housing has also been told that the government has yet to appoint a senior counsel to investigate the defective blocks controversy, despite promising it would do so last year. So no senior counsel investigating what led to all of this and it costing the state at least, you know, close on 3 billion. The committee heard that only 44 million euro has been spent out of an earmarked 100 million defective blocks budget since 2021. It was given an update on the government's defective blocks scheme from the Department of Housing, the Housing Agency, County and City Management Association, the National Standards Authority of Ireland and Engineers Ireland. An enhanced version of the scheme was introduced last year and figures provided show that there have been 436 applications until May 1st under the new scheme. Some 16 of these applications have been rejected as they did not meet the damage threshold, while 195 have been either offered or awarded grant money. Now, I heard of a case of a person who did some remedial work on their property, and the way the scheme is set out now, you get an engineer to come and they do a visual initially, but because they'd done some remedial work, it wasn't visually, I'm not saying this is what's happened in this case, by the way, but the house was, the engineer says, well, I don't see the telltales, you know, there's the width of the crack, the design of the cracks and all that kind of stuff. So I wonder if those that had tried to make their house look sort of respectable and livable are now sort of losing out on this scheme. If you've been affected like that, please let us know. Because my understanding is that the surveyor comes out and the initial inspection is a visual one. So if you filled the cracks and painted to try and make the house livable, it could be riddled with defective concrete, but you can't get on the scheme. The scheme covers eligible costs up to a maximum of 420 grand. Included within this overall cap, the scheme also provides grants for temporary accommodation of 15 grand, storage of 5, and essential immediate repairs of 5 grand. Assistant Secretary in the Department of Housing, Anya Stapleton, said that in total, between applications which have been carried over from the previous scheme and new applications under the enhanced scheme, there are more than 2,000 applications in the system at various stages of process. Local authorities administer the scheme along with the housing agency. Sinn Féin's Owen O'Brien asked reps at the meeting for the total number of households who have received the full grant determination, whether from the older scheme or the revised scheme. The chief executive of Mayo County Council, Kevin Kelly, said there have been only 18 households fully completed in Mayo, 43 in Donegal, giving a total of 61. I instantly, when I thought 61, thought Donegal, but only 43 houses in this county out of the thousands effective have been fully remediated. Okay, that's that. On to the Independent, and it's in all the papers, of course. About 27,000 Ukrainian refugees will have their rate of social welfare cut after the cabinet signed off on the measure yesterday. More Ukrainian refugees in state housing will be unaffected by the cuts. About 39,000 people who have been housed by the state will not be affected by the changes. There are 66,000 Ukrainian refugees in state-provided housing. This includes fully serviced accommodation as well as pledged housing. Around 27,000 who came here before March 14th are believed to be in state-serviced accommodation and will now be affected by the cut in social welfare. So, you know, a lot of Ukrainians have, quite a number have moved away to another country or gone home. There are those then that have moved into private rental accommodation. There are those then that have employment. There is an argument that amongst these 27,000 refugees that will have their pay cut to 38.80 a week, that they could be single parents who can't go out to work, older people who don't have employment opportunities, i.e. there are some that feel that this 27,000 maybe are the most vulnerable of all of the Ukrainian refugees. So on the face of it, this seems popular. Of course, we are in an election cycle. We're approaching the European and local elections. Maybe this is what some people want to hear. Maybe this is a vote winner. I'm not saying that's the government motivation. They've rejected that. But are you prepared to dig down deep into this? Do you think it is fair? Do you think it is right? Now, let's be clear. These people are still in accommodation. They still get their laundry done. If the car breaks down, I understand they can go to a garage and get it fixed. They still get food and what have you. So they're not going to be destitute. But anyway, I just wonder what your overall view on all of that is. The government argues that they have to treat all equal. Right, now, the Irish Daily Mail. Weight loss drugs are being sold on the black market in Ireland, and experts are warning of an extremely disturbing increase in the sale of unprescribed medicines. Drugs such as Ozempic, which has become the weight loss drug of choice for celebrities, are being peddled on social media and on clandestine websites as its popularity has soared. So there's a bit of a story here which we'll go through, I think, a little later on in the programme. This is, where I'm wrong, I apologise, but this is a breakthrough drug that assists people to lose weight, particularly diabetics, you know, that need to lose weight for life expectancy and general well-being. Then it appeared to have been prescribed to people who were overweight but not diabetic. And then the HSE sent out a diktat to pharmacists and others cracking down on this, saying, look, this is only for people who are diabetic. So then there would have been people that were on it, and it becomes a commodity, doesn't it? It becomes, well, you know, it was working for me, I want to keep taking it or what have you. And then there are people that have been prescribed it that are reselling it because there's money in it, right? And then you've got others who perhaps want to lose weight, but they're not diabetic, which is the criteria now, and they want to get their hands on this drug, so they're going onto social media and onto websites to try and get their hands on it. Some patients who received the drug legitimately are said to be reselling it to friends and neighbours. Former Fine Gael TD and Dublin pharmacist Kate O'Connell told the Irish Daily Mail that she's heard of her customers buying the drug online and then selling it onto the neighbours for profit. We see people, the most educated of people, savvy people, admitting to me as a pharmacist they have taken Ozempic they've bought online. She said, I would counsel them about the risks of taking the drug, the drugs you're getting. That sounds crazy to me, ordering a drug online and pumping it into you, not knowing what's in it. But anyway, any views on that, let us know again. 086 60 25,000. I just thought this interesting because a few people text in saying, is drink next? Because cigarettes are going to be banned to under 21s. People were saying, well, is booze next? The health minister's opined on this. The health minister said there are no plans to ban the sale of alcohol to people under 21, despite a move to raise the minimum age for the purchase of cigarettes. Under plans approved by Cabinet, the legal age for buying cigarettes and other tobacco products will rise from 18 to 21. On raising the age for buying alcohol, Stephen Donnelly said yesterday there are no considerations of any changes on alcohol whatsoever. It has never come up. It's not being considered. Should it be considered? What do you think? 086 60 25,000. So as you know, the inevitable happened. The portal between New York and Dublin has closed. Lots of things were happening. As you know, people were flashing their bums. People were appearing to take drugs on the Dublin side. People were holding up pictures of swastikas. People were holding up pictures on the phones of the Twin Towers. And then one person revealed, as they've been described in the paper today, her big apples from Dublin to New York. The cheeky model, who first got the New York to Dublin portal shut down after flashing her boobs, purred last night. It was chest fun. And Ava Louise declared, "I thought the people of Dublin deserved to see my two New York homegrown potatoes." Oh, right, she's from New York. They were flashed the other way. Organisers are currently battling to get a grip on the 24/7 two-way live stream, which allows people on either side of the Atlantic Ocean to interact with each other live. The installation linking Dublin to New York has been blighted by a wave of inappropriate behaviour since it launched by Lord Mayor Dahi DeRosa last Wednesday. And last night, Dublin City Council switched it off until later this week after their initial plan to blur unsuitable content was found to be not satisfactory. We can't have nice things. That's just the bottom line. But the lady who flashed her bosom, overjoyed with the publicity she's received as a result. So, of course, that's only going to lead to more, isn't it? And just to keep you updated on matters in Europe, of course, the EU Migration Pact, we have yet to adopt it here in Ireland. We abstained on this vote for that reason. But European Union nations have endorsed sweeping asylum system reforms. This happened in Europe yesterday. It comes as campaigning heats up for Europe-wide elections next month, with migration expected to be an important issue. So you have to remember that for some countries in Europe, this migration pact is a great thing because it means that there's going to be less pressure on them, that it's going to be a fairer system, right? So whilst we're many in this country, sorry, are saying this migration pact's not good for Ireland, look what it might mean, we're locking into this and so on and so forth. For other countries who have way, way, way more of an issue of migration than us, they think this is a vote winner for the EU elections, believe it or not. It just goes to show, doesn't it? The new pact on migration and asylum was officially approved by the 27 nations EU economy ministers. It ends more than 8 years of work to rewrite the rulebook for handling people who enter Europe without authorisation. EU government ministers approved 10 legislative sections that are part of the pact, running to more than 1,500 pages of legal text. Hungary and Poland, which have long opposed any obligation for countries to host migrants or pay for their upkeep, voted against the package. The new rules lay out the guidelines for screening people to establish whether they qualify for some kind of protection, like asylum, or deporting them if they're not allowed to stay. Mainstream parties hope the reforms will starve the far right of vote-winning oxygen in the June 6th to 9th elections. But as I say, my understanding is Ireland actually abstained on that vote. The reason, I believe, is because, as I say, we have not adopted it, because it's more controversial here than it might be in other countries. Right, so we had a few questions about the vacant property refurbishment grant, and I suggested earlier in the week that, you know, maybe there's lots of people, there's a huge interest in this in Donegal already, and there's been a series of public meetings around the place. It's still more to come, Vincent, is there? Or have they all been done now at this point?
Concluded for now.
Concluded, okay. So a lot of people have a lot of information, but still we want to reach those that don't. And you just heard from Vincent Cranley, who's the Vacant Homes Officer, Community Development and Planning Services with Donegal County Council. Vincent, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Greg.
Okay, right. So talk to us about the Vacant Property Refurbishment Grant. As I say, and this will come out as we talk, a lot of people in Donegal already know about this because there's been quite a big uptake in this county compared to other parts of the country. But what is it to begin with?
That's true. There's been a great uptake and it's been great to see it. The grant was launched in 2022. It's intended for bringing properties back to use, properties that were built before 2007 and have been vacant for 2 years. You either have to be the owner of the property or in the process of becoming the owner of the property. So in terms of qualifying criteria, that's essentially it. It's not hard to access this scheme, and I think that's led us to the good uptake that we have seen to date. The scheme itself is comprised of two parts. There's 50,000 grant, maximum 50,000 for properties that are vacant. And then there's a further 20,000 top up to that amount. And that's for properties that, it's called a derelict top up, but it's for properties that have identifiable structural defects. So it has to be dangerous or unsound. And in that instance, you need to get a professional to carry out a structural report on the property that accompanies your application.
And there's lots of them around the county that are very proficient in this already, because it's been running for quite some while, and they've represented on behalf of a lot of people already, I presume.
Yes, and I think when it was promoted first, the uptake probably wasn't great when it was launched first in 2022, because the qualifying grant amounts were less. It was 30,000 for vacant and 50,000 for the derelict top up. The Chartered Surveyors of Ireland were asked to look at it, and they recommended the figures be increased, and that's the figures we have currently: 50,000 vacant and 70,000 if it includes the derelict top up.
So in terms of the top up, so say for instance you had an asbestos roof, does that count as a
asbestos roof? Depends. The aspect has to be unsound.
Do you like my first question?
Yeah, that was a good one to start with. I missed the script.
I won't go with no cracks up the supporting walls here. I've gone straight in for a dodgy one.
If it's in place and not unsound or dangerous currently, well, no.
Okay.
Would be the answer to that question.
But if a roof was in fear of collapse?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay, right. And then obviously other more obvious things like rising cracks or what have you. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. Do you find the majority of people are also getting the top up?
The majority of people would, I don't have it to hand, but I would say it's probably about a 60-40 split, okay. Maybe on 60% would be for the vacant grant only, the 50,000, and maybe 40 for
the... Now, a couple of people said, text in, which kind of triggered this conversation, is they're really keen on it, but they can't, they don't have access to sort of a bridging loan or what have you. So after approval, what is the drawdown on it?
It's a receipts-based scheme.
Yep.
So at the time of application, you fill out within the application form your costing. So you determine what works are required to the property and you put costs against those. Mm-hmm. So you either get quotes from tradespersons or maybe a professional like an architect or a QS or someone to assist you with that. So you're making your application based on that. When you're approved, you're then proceed to works and you keep the receipts for all works, receipts, invoices, etc. Mm-hmm. for all works done. When you conclude your works, you submit those receipts to us.
So the work has to be, the house has to be completed then?
It does.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of reasons for that. The way the scheme is constructed, you can either be the owner of the property or in the process mm-hmm. of becoming the owner of the property.
Yes.
If there's a legal charge attached to the property once for the grant amount that you obtain, and that's applied to the title. So if that was the case where you did not become the owner of the property, you were not the owner of the property, we would have nothing to attach the charge to. So you have to be the title owner in order for that to happen.
And we'll probably get to that, because there are criteria and there has to be a clawback option there as well if those criteria
correct.
Aren't met. So that makes perfect sense, right? Yeah. So we'll get to that in a second. I just have a couple of more questions in relation to the concern that people might have, right, that they might borrow and then your team look at the documentation, the receipts and go, no, I'm sorry, now you don't qualify for this loan. So how do people avoid that pitfall potentially?
Well, we visit the property twice.
So okay, right.
We visit it at, once you send in your application to us at the approval stage, we will visit the property. And at that time, we will look at the costs you've submitted. You tell us the works that you're intending to do, and our technical assessment team will look at those. They'll consider them and we'll see, yes, that they are accurate and reflective of what we can see on site. And we make our report on that. And if everything's in order at that point, we give you your approval or approval in principle if you're not the owner. We come back to you then at the end. When you submit your receipts to us, we come back to you. We take the receipts, we look at, we see the works are done, we verify that. And if we're verifying the receipts and the tradesperson you've used are tax compliant, there's no reason why you would not.
Yep. Now, in terms of the costs, and there might be no advantage in doing this, but presumably the building work, the plumbing work, the electricity work, that all has to be done by tax-compliant registered professionals.
Yes, any tradesperson you take into the property must be tax-compliant.
But if I wanted to, and by the way, this might sound like I have a problem. I don't have one, by the way. I'm trying to put myself in people's positions.
Of course.
If I wanted to source the materials myself, yes, right, and have them on site for the professionals to arrive, maybe that might appeal to someone.
Absolutely.
Because they could piece it out a little bit better. That's okay. You can source your own materials, but the work has to be done by competent professionals.
Not always. Right. If you are fit and able to do the work yourself, you can do so, but you can't claim the value of your own time. So in that instance, yes, you would claim the value of the materials
so
purchased.
So arguably you'd get more value for your grant then?
Yes, potentially you could. And some
but the
people
architect,
have done that.
Okay, right. But the architect obviously would have to be signed off to be of a standard.
Yeah, I should just say on that, like, the only trades that you're mandated to use really is the electrical, registered electrical contractor.
That's interesting. Okay.
Because you won't get house insurance without the
certificate of
completion from the
electrician.
That
bit
of
information feels significant. I don't know why, but it does feel significant. Now, I presume is also an option, people, though, to look at the same time as SEIA grants. Is that just completely separate? Is that factored in? Is that married in any way to the scheme or other?
There's an allowance made for it. The only aspects of the refurbishment that are not covered by this grant are the aspects that are covered by the SEIA grant.
Okay.
So it is encouraged, and it's within the application form and the supporting documentation, that you are encouraged to apply to the SEIA for those aspects that are not covered.
Mm.
So like the heat pump, the solar panels, exterior insulation, cavity insulation, attic insulation.
Okay.
So we do not cover for those.
So that makes that actually option maybe even more attractive to
it
some.
Does, it does, because it potentially increases the value of the combined grants that you could get for.
And the rating of the property then as well.
Absolutely.
There's another question I was going to ask in relation to that. It'll come back to me, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. Looking through the forms, I looked through the forms there before doing this piece, and there seems to be monies within the 50 allocated to different things.
Yes.
Are they movable feasts, right? So say, what's the allocation for a roof, for an example? 15, is it?
14,000 for
14,
a roof.
14, right. Yeah. And for windows?
21,000 for
right.
Windows.
So if I can get the windows for 15 and the roof's costing me 21, do you work with people in that regard?
What we advise everyone to do is the costings page. You're not looking to arrive at the 50,000 or 70,000.
Understood, yeah.
We want you to put in full reflective costs of all the works that are required to be done.
Which is likely to exceed the 50. I mean, in
most
reality,
cases,
in this,
yes.
Unless it's a one room box farmhouse somewhere or other.
We would have some applicants now that have completed the process and maybe not required the full amount.
Okay.
They just put in the receipts for the value of materials and the works needed. So,
but the allocation from you is not a percentage of the overall cost, though.
No. It'll be
So happens that they were able to complete the works for 44.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Right. But on your point there regarding moving from point to point, you could find maybe that you got a quote for windows of 14,000, but then when you went to purchase them, you got another quote from somebody else for 12.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there is movement in that, and that's why we want you to put in the full reflective cost so that you have scope to move within that. Now, it is worth noting also on page 6 and 7, if anyone gets a chance to look at the application form.
I got to about 3.
Right, okay. The good stuff was after that.
Right, go on, I'm going to miss.
There are cap amounts on certain aspects.
Yes.
So, for example, a kitchen is capped at 7,700. So if you give us a receipt for 10,000, the most we can refund you or recoup is 7,700.
So also too, because people might fear that this is going to run out at some point or other. There's no signs at this point, is it? I mean, this is, let's be very clear, and I don't think you need to comment on this at all, but this is government delivering housing at an incredible return on the investment here. When you talk of I don't know what the price is, and I'm not asking you either, Vincent, but for the government to deliver one unit of social housing, it's far, 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 far in excess than possibly what this is being done. So do you anticipate the revenue being cut off any time in relation to this scheme? Because people might start panicking, going, right, this sounds good, I want involved.
The current indication is that the scheme will close at the end of 2025, December 2025. Now, there is a review of the scheme ongoing currently. All local authorities were asked to give their input on that, what's working well, what we can, any suggestions we have for improvements, etc. There's an independent consultant carrying out this review, and their findings will be published, it's intended to be published, at the end of this month, May. So we're eager to see what comes out of that.
Would your feeling be that this represents really good value for money for government spend?
I would think so, yeah. Yes. And from the feedback we get from applicants, they are really encouraged. They're delighted. We would get a lot of people that would say to us that this project maybe would never have come across their radar, and they might not have any other real option in truth. Mm. We would see an awful lot of younger couples that have identified maybe a parent or a grandparent's property, unfortunately, maybe deceased or something like that. And this property was starting to, you know, it was lying empty for these number of years.
Often I think some too, that a lot of these properties might be in more rural areas, not exclusively, but they might be. And if this is a way of populating those areas, because just to the criteria, there is a period of time that this either has to be the applicant's principal private residence or available for long-term rental. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah. So
so in other words, you can't get this grant and do Airbnb?
Absolutely not.
Or flog the property straight away?
No, you can't sell it for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So that 10-year clawback is applied to the charge, as the charge when complete.
So this is delivering housing in often rural areas, and it has to be permanently lived in housing?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So is it 10 years? How long does it have to be available for rent?
10 years.
Okay.
So you register the property with the Residential Tenancies Board.
Did that
board.
Used to be five?
No,
no, it was always 10.
No, it was
okay,
always
10.
That's fine. You register the property. So before you actually can recoup the money on a rental application, you have to have the tenancy registered with the RTB. Mm-hmm. You have to provide us with a copy of that. And then you have to renew that registration every year for 10 years.
How much of the original property has to be retained?
A very good question, and one that we're frequently asked. There was no hard and fast guideline set down, which left it a little bit ambiguous for people, you know, in their interpretation of that. We look for a minimum of three walls, three elevations, exterior elevations to be retained. A lot of these properties may have been small, one bedroom.
You're seeing a lot of extensions then, I take it?
Yes. Okay, so, yeah. You know, that allows the provision maybe to take away one wall and extend in that direction.
Well, with that in mind, obviously any extension requires planning permission.
Yes.
Okay, so how does this scheme work alongside the planning process? Planning process is not... It doesn't take forever, but it takes a period of time. Can I get plans, submit those plans into the planning process and apply for this grant at the same time?
You can do that, but it's not...
For provisional approval?
It's not... It wouldn't be our recommendation to do that.
You know, people are panicking. Right? They're afraid it's going to run out. You've said it's been reviewed in May.
Of course. What we would advise... Well, firstly, what we advise everybody to do in any of the public consultations we've done, the key piece of advice, and people that have attended would probably be tired listening to me saying the same thing, but... our number one piece of advice is to start with your architect. Mm. And this is feeding really into the extensions because, and not always properties with extensions, but if your property was of an age that maybe not had a septic tank or maybe had a septic tank and not an effluent treatment system or a percolation area, they would require planning permission. Mm-hmm. And some people don't know that.
Yeah.
So the planning process takes approximately 12 to 14 weeks. The grant application process at the moment is taking about 6-7 weeks. So when you get your approval letter, you have a 13-month time frame to do your works.
To complete the works.
To complete your works, yeah. So your clock is ticking from the date of your approval letter.
I
so
get you.
You don't want to be, and this is the key thing that we're trying to get across to people, you don't want to be in a situation where you're waiting on a planning decision waiting to start works. And even when you get your plan decision, you have 2 weeks commencement notice.
Do you know what
period.
Would be really probably useful is the sooner any review is done yeah. and a little bit more time certainty is given to this. End of 2025 is quite some time away, but I think if you were given to end of 26, 27, it would alleviate you know, people making mistakes, feeling under pressure. Right, you have been texting in great numbers. Vincent, you're all right to stay with us for a little while, are you?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Okay, so we do have to take a quick break. We're in the company of Vincent Cranley here. He's the Vacants Homes Officer with Donegal County Council. We're talking about the vacant property refurbishment grant, which has seen a huge uptake in Donegal, but clearly, given the amount of texts and calls we've had, still a great deal of interest in it. A caller says, great system for those who have a second property and then make money out of it through renting it. That's sort of framed as a negative. But if this gets a unit of rental property into the market for 10 years in the midst of a housing crisis, that's not a negative. That's what. Yeah.
Well, I think you've answered that as well as I can answer, okay, really, because right. that's the crux yeah. of what we're trying to do here. You know, we're trying to bring these.
You know, this is
back.
Seen as a criticism. That's quite literally what this scheme is about. Okay, back after these. Okay, Vincent Cranley's in. He is the Vacant Homes Officer, and we're answering questions about the Vacant Property Refurbishment Grant, and the lines have lit up, so I wanted to take that break so we can get to the questions. One thing I meant to mention to you, Vincent, when we were talking about the totals, if someone's living on an island, there's an extra stream of funding there?
That's correct, yes. There's a 20% top-up for the four qualifying islands. In Donegal, so we have Anishbofin, Gola, Tory and Arnmore. Mm-hmm. So if you have a property there, the vacant property grant, obviously 20% top up equates to 60,000 and 84,000 for the
derelicts. Right, let's get to some questions then. Does the work under the vacant property grant have to be undertaken by a registered contract, or can it be carried out by individual tradesmen? So if someone's to do it by direct labour, as the old saying used to go.
Yes, that's one of the real benefits of the scheme, and that's and the feedback we get, it's very much acknowledged that the flexibility that exists here. So you can give the full contract to or project to a contractor. Again, as we were saying earlier, you can do the works yourself, claim all the value of the materials, albeit using the registered electrical contractor, or a mix of the two, whichever you see fit.
If the old property has the old grey wiring. Mm-hmm. That has to be stripped out and the new grade wiring has to be put in, does it? Or is that kind of too specific a question?
It's specific, but happy enough to say that any electrical contractor, I would imagine now, that goes in is not going to give you a cert.
For the older, for the old. Even if it's in situ before,
no.
pre-date, okay. Because that's about when it was connected to power and all that kind of stuff. Is there any way of applying after works have been carried out? So maybe someone's already gone through this process and now go balls.
in fairness, it's frustrating for us because we've heard a lot of genuine cases of people coming to us, you know, and maybe those we're not aware of it. Or what I would say is, any works that are done before the date of our technical inspection cannot be recouped.
There's no retrospective element.
No retrospective, but there is. Some people could be midstream.
Yes.
And we would still come, we'd advise you get your application to us as quickly as you could.
Right.
We will try and see if we can prioritise maybe. Okay.
It sounds like you want to work with people on this.
Very much so.
That seems to be.
Very much so.
Is the renovation grant paid out in one payment at the end of work, or can it be paid in several payments as work progresses?
It's paid in one amount, and that goes back really to the charge document. The same way you're paid a mortgage and you get your staged payments, the charge is applied to the property at the outset. This is is applied at the end. Mm. So in that circumstance, we have no mechanism to do staged payments. It has to be one payment and one charge amount that's applied.
Can a registered builder claim for his own time on his own house?
The property must be owned by the individual and not the company. Mm-hmm. If the builder his company is doing the work on his property, or he's invoicing the individual, it could be looked at, and I'm sure we could do something there maybe.
What happens after you've signed the grant off. I don't know, this is not going to be really your problem, but maybe you've spoken to colleagues or there's a system in place. But the question is forwarded as follows. What's to stop people who get these grants from using them as Airbnb? Will the council be checking these houses to see that they aren't being used as short-term lets?
We will be contacting each applicant on the anniversary of the registration of the charge. Because when they first register the property with the RTB, they provide us with that number. And on the anniversary, we'll seek that. Whether we're not going to disclose whether we're going to go door to door doing these things, but that'll be our starting point anyway with the registration. And we need to see the tenancy agreed, etc. So that'll all be provided on the information coming from the RTB.
Okay. Will the derelict home grant do barn conversions qualify?
No, currently not. It is a question that was very popular at the beginning, but the grant does not cover any outbuildings.
How do we differentiate between an outbuilding and an old farmhouse, for example, you know, an old residential property? Like, say I got an air code for a barn.
If it's a barn, when we visit the property, we kind of do, as part of our inspection or assessment, we would need to see that it was habited. At some point in time, there'd be chimneys there, or there'd be something identifiable as a dwelling.
What about if someone? So obviously, that this negates that question. If someone has a shed adjacent to the house that was built at the time, maybe the designs of a granny flat for it or something, could that possibly qualify?
No. again, if it's any kind of building other than the dwelling, currently does not apply. Any annexes or that type of thing, it would have to be clearly identified as a separate dwelling. Understood. It can't be an annex of the original dwelling.
You have to have money to pay the builder and then wait on the money from the council, so people who can't borrow money cannot avail of the grant. My understanding is from people I've spoken to that there are some lenders that are looking favourably at successful applicants to this scheme. Now, I mean, presumably they have to have other collateral. I don't know. I've not really dug that deep into it. But my understanding is that there are some lending institutions, community-type ones, that are looking quite favourable at bridging some of this.
That's correct. And probably one of the biggest questions that we got when we went to the public events was, you know, the access to finance. And obviously we're not in that space where we can either advise too much or provide that solution. But we did engage with some of those financial institutions that you make reference to. And thankfully, some now have developed a product that are going to provide that interim finance. But obviously the qualifying criteria for that is with the applicant on
whatever
an individual
else
basis.
They might need. I don't know if it's secured or unsecured either. I was left a very old house, but I want to build on the site, but not on the place where the house was. I feel there's a better view from the garage part, which is attached to the house. Could I qualify for the grant? So really, I suppose the question here is, and I think it comes in another couple of questions, people want to have avail of this, but they want to move the footprint, right? But you've said already that you really want to see at least three walls retained. So I presume that that's going to be a problem. You know, you're not really there to provide money so people can build on a site.
No. And this is very much about the refurbishment of the existing. And that's the core principle, really, of the scheme. So those intentions maybe where it might make sense for a number of reasons, but in that instance, that property wouldn't be suitable or applicable.
Do you have to source the contractors, plumbers and electricians yourself? That's a yes.
Yes.
I mean, of course you do. But that don't mean to sound like I don't think that's a valid question. Of course it is, because some people are just coming to this for the very first time. Does the grant work if you're going to inherit the property but start the application before it's actually yours?
You can. And when we mentioned earlier about you're in the process of becoming the owner, that could be that you're purchasing the property or that you're going to inherit or you're being left the property. In that instance, a letter from your solicitor stating that they're acting on your behalf and you becoming the registrar of the property will allow you access the scheme. But one of the very key points to make on this is you have to be the registered owner of the property at completion of works and submission receipts in order to get paid.
To get paid, exactly. So if that were get bogged down, appealed, whatever, in the 13 months elapsed. You're in bother. Okay,
it's not that we're going to dump you out of the scheme, but you will be delayed getting paid until you can provide that information. Okay.
Does the grant cover a home with just the wall steeds standing? I don't know what the wall steeds are.
Wall steads, I think, maybe might mean there. Again, this is a case by case basis, but we would have applications received for some really older properties. We would demand really that. The three elevations that are being retained must be up to lintel or gutter level height, we'll say. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, this comes down to the structure report that you're going to provide from the competent professional. So they have to, within that, they have to tell the story of the property, a little bit of background history, but ultimately and critically to this, they have to confirm that these walls can accept a refurbishment and the additional development of the property. If these were to fall during the refurbishment, well, then you're out.
Yeah, and I can see where people might sort of get you on site, you leave, and just toss the whole lot and start from scratch as well. Can you ask Vincent if I can do the costings myself, as we will be undertaking the work? So that sounds like, other than the electricity, right, that these they're going to do everything themselves. Can they submit the costings to through the portal? Or through the application form?
If we would advise to get professional advice or an opinion, we'll say, on the costings. And there's two reasons really for that. We very much want people starting out on the footing that they're fully appreciative of the full costs that this project is going to cost. Like, some people are coming to us for a grant and they're saying, I thought that 50,000 would do it, and they end up, it cost them an awful lot more. So, you know, and you're ticking a box within the application form.
You have to be 100% sure that you can complete this with the resources available to you within 13 months, or else there is no drawdown of any grant.
Absolutely. So, and that's why we want you, the all applicants, to be of a firm.
I think it's kind of like a duty of care type of thing.
Pretty much, yes.
Can you use two grants on one property?
Two grants.
I presume 250s, really, they're talking about. I don't know.
It's unique to every air cold.
I love the question.
Well,
time limit on getting work done. You said 13 months from approval date.
Yes.
There's no wiggle room on that. How do you determine how is it signed off as completed?
There is what we call a minimum move-in standard. The house doesn't have to be finished. The property doesn't have to be refurbished. We'll say flower pots at the door type thing, you know. We just need to, when we come to the property, we need to see a functioning kitchen, a functioning bathroom, and a livable bedroom.
How long are people generally waiting for the payments? I presume enough have come through to get a sense of that.
We have 17 people now that have come through and paid. We have another three in the next week or so that'll be paid.
Okay.
So we're very, very conscious of this, and we have put a process in place to streamline that. And we have it at the moment down to around 6-7 weeks.
Okay.
Now, the only thing that can impact on that is maybe proof of title, you know, being finalised in the property that was left to you, right, or you purchased.
I get you. So how long does the person have to live in the house after the remedial works have been carried out?
How long do you have to live in the house? Well, you must live in it for the 10 years to
satisfy.
What if you
pass away?
If you pass away, the clawback condition passes to the benefactor of the estate.
So if they move into it and it becomes their principal private residence, there is no clawback?
The clawback still remains for the 10-year period.
But in other words, it's not activated?
Correct, it's not activated.
Yeah, okay,
no.
Sorry, I should have been clear on that. If you're a registered contractor and you subcontract the work out, is that okay? We're kind of getting into yes and no territory, if possible, because of time.
I'm not sure the context of that now.
If you're a registered contractor and you subcontract the work out, is that okay? The other answers have covered that.
I think so.
Yeah, must have come in quite early.
Just to say on that, maybe if there's any confusion there, the applications are only available to individuals, so it couldn't have been a company, the builder company.
Yep. Does it cover paving out the back of the house? You have to refurbish if you have a wet garden.
Yes, there's an allowance for external works up to a cap of 7,000.
What do you have to provide to show the property is vacant for 2 years?
There's a couple of means of doing that. You could get 2 years of energy bills.
You can make a declaration, can't you?
You can make a declaration. It's a sworn declaration from the solicitor or the estate agent if you purchase the property. But it must be their declaration and not them confirming you have said.
It's not like going to the guards and get them to witness your statement.
No,
they have to, and that's quite a responsibility.
Yes.
Greg, would an old school be able to get the grant right? So I buy an old school. It's got chimneys, Vincent. It's got chimneys.
There's been a couple of these. And school houses, some school houses had a dwelling element within them. And if that was the case, well, yes, absolutely. What I would say maybe is we would look at it on a case-by-case.
And listen, you're not going to be investing any money until such time as the team look at it and see if it would qualify. If I have a house with a stone extension, am I entitled to the grant for the new wraparound insulation on the stone part of the house?
The insulation would come under the SEAA. So that
which is another grant that's available. Last one that I have time for here. You can't move it. Someone's saying, on a farm that's a derelict house, which is very close to farm sheds, can we move the house back 10 metres to still qualify for the grant? You've answered that it has to be on the footprint of the house, the original element of it. If a house is vacant with defective concrete, there's a different scheme in place for
correct.
It. Okay. We have a property that doesn't have an air code, but the property tax is fully compliant. Does this qualify?
Yes.
It does?
Yes.
Okay, right. The 13 months time frame is a big issue. It's difficult to get people even to give a price, never mind get anyone on site to do the work. Can the time frame be extended as it's a very tight time frame?
It is one of the things that has been raised in the review of the scheme. So we will see what comes out of that. I would say that there are a number of applicants now that have come through the scheme in the 13 months, so it's going to be different for everybody, I suppose. But there is the possibility.
Sorry.
There is the possibility.
There's more questions coming in here. Right.
In exceptional circumstances, but there must be exceptional circumstances to verify an extension.
Listen, Vincent, you've seen yourself.
Yeah, they're coming thick and fast here.
Exactly. And we may revisit it down the line. I think it's useful for you actually to get the info out there as it is for us, as it is for us to be able to help people as well. That is literally all the time we have. Vincent Cranley, Vacant Homes Officer and Community Development and Planning Services with Donegal County Council. Thank you so much for your time. If people want more information,
They can either call through the call centre and ask for the vacant homes team, or on the website. There's information on the website as well.
As you can see, huge interest. Yep. Okay.
Yep.